Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. So thank you for joining me once again. This is such an opportunity to get empowered with truthful information so you can make those really wise decisions regarding your health and well-being. And as always, I dedicate this show with people who are inspiring, opening our minds, and giving us the knowledge and wisdom to help us really navigate through our lives. I want to welcome anyone who may be listening for the first time. I invite you to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I have special reports I send out, and all of these shows are archived, and then I forward them on to everyone on my list. And that's also true if you go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because I post on a daily basis, and it's a place I can just keep giving you the great information that I come across, and my radio shows are all posted there as well. So we don't want you ever to miss out on these interviews and these very, very powerful conversations, because today is another opportunity to have one of those very powerful conversations that absolutely will impact your life. And I am so privileged today to have Dr. Martin Paul join us again. We're going to be talking about the proven biological fix of our wireless world. And let me just share a little bit about Dr. Paul. He is a professor emeritus of biochemistry and basic medical research sciences at Washington State University and author of the acclaimed book Explaining Unexplained Illnesses, Disease Paradigm for Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Multiple Chemical Sensitivity, Fibromyalgia, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and Gulf War Syndrome. He published an important paper on how electromagnetic fields impact the cells of our bodies. The study was honored by inclusion at the Global Medical Discovery as one of the top publications of 2013. So it's my very great pleasure to welcome Dr. Martin Paul back to our show again. And Dr. Paul, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
So you were on, I think it was almost 3 years ago now. I was looking back in the archives, and your interview was so seminal for me because this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, the dangers of electromagnetic radiation frequencies, as I meet more and more people who are experiencing the consequences of exposure. And your work has just played such an important part in helping the worldwide scientists and researchers and passionate advocates like myself have the evidence and understanding of why our cell phones are so dangerous. You know, recently there was a Canadian broadcasting company program on the dangers inside your cell phone. We were talking about this before the show. And the program was, I thought, really well done. They went to the experts and talked about all the research and the harm and the evidence and brought in the industry side of things. But it was, I think, pretty heavily weighed on the fact that we have enough evidence to say that this technology is causing harm. But at the end of the show, the person who was the primary speaker on the show, who said she had interviewed and researched this 20 years earlier, and she was coming back and revisiting the subject, and her conclusion was, well, we still don't know, and I'll talk to you all in 20 more years. And I just thought that was a pretty lame way to end a very powerful program. So I'm so glad you're here, because we really need to explain to people that the dangers are real. And we're going to go through, based on your research, exactly what is going on when we expose ourselves to this technology, which includes cell phones and routers and wireless, you know, networks, computers, iPads, Bluetooth, the Apple Watches, the, you know, smart TVs, I mean, the many things. Do you know, Dr. Paul, I was looking at some of the devices that they're putting out now, and there is a Bluetooth pacifier for babies, so you can monitor your child's temperature at all times on your phone.
Hmm.
Can you believe that? So
unfortunately,
so
I can, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so this is such a huge topic, and I want to just jump right in, Dr. Paul, because you have laid out a model to explain, and the research to back it up, how our devices, how this wireless technology is impacting our health. So Let's explore that, and explore it in a way so our lay audience can really get the gravity of the situation.
Okay. In 2013, I published the paper you mentioned, and let me say I've published five other papers since then that each have their own, you know, have important forward steps in them. What that paper showed was that there were a whole series of studies, and most of these were in cells in culture, where you expose those cells to these EMFs, electromagnetic fields, and you get certain responses that occur. And these are all occurring at levels, at low-level exposures, that, according to industry, shouldn't do anything. So, because they don't produce any heating, and heating is the only mechanism of effects that industry acknowledges. So what was shown in each of these cases was that you could take what are called calcium channel blockers. These are drugs that are specific for blocking what are called voltage-gated calcium channels, and I'll tell you a little bit about those in a minute. And they then block or greatly lower the effects that are seen. Okay, and so that those channel blockers.
Those medications. If people take the medications, then the impact that is observed from exposure is reduced. Okay.
Well, it's not clear. It's not clear that this is a useful therapeutic effect, you know, in people yet. Because there, you know, because the basic problem being that, you know, these channels, these voltage-gated calcium channels, have very important functions in the body, and so you can't block them all, you know.
Right, right. I
understand. And so basically, what's true is that, you know, so we know that, and we know that these calcium channel blockers, and there are different types that have been used, five different types, and they have different structures, and the only thing that they're thought to do is that in common is to block these voltage-gated calcium channels. And so when you see that that they then block or greatly lower the responses, what that tells you is that the main target of these electromagnetic fields, the EMFs, is the activation of these voltage-gated calcium channels, and I abbreviate those VGCCs. And then it's the various indirect effects, what we call downstream effects, of that activation that's responsible for most, if not all, of the biology here. And
okay.
So,
before we go further, I don't want to lose people here because I want people to really understand all these terms.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with defining. When you say voltage-gated calcium channel, so the person who doesn't have any background in biochemistry,
right.
what is it?
What is it? Good question. Okay. Okay, so these are channels. And so a channel is something that can open up and allow things to flow through it, in this case calcium ions.
Through the cell membranes.
And these occur in the outer membrane, in what's called the plasma membrane of cells. And so in most cells normally have much, much lower calcium in the cell than outside the cell. So, and it's like 10,000 times lower in the cell than outside the cell. So normally you keep the calcium levels very low, but these channels basically in our normal biology occasionally open up and allow some calcium to come in, and then they produce some regulatory responses that are important for the cells. And so usually this just occurs for a very short time period. And then they close up, and then, you know, everything goes back to low levels. Now, what we're dealing with here is a situation where the EMFs activate these channels, and they open up.
On every single cell in the body? Are they found in every single cell?
I don't know of any cells that don't have them, let's put it that way. And
okay,
even,
so the effect is global in the body, right? We're not, we're talking every single cell in the body is responding.
Well, except the densities of these varies in different cells. So
mm-hmm.
they're not all the same. They're not all equally sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But as best I can determine, all or almost all of them do respond, but some respond much more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And also these VGCCs are regulated by the cells, and so that regulation will help determine how responsive they are to the EMFs as well. Okay, so there are a number of things that make this, you know, more complex, but the basic story is the same, that as far as we can tell, everything's going through the, I'll say maybe not quite everything, but almost everything goes through this VGCC activation. And the consequences of that, and the simple story then is that every single thing, and so the first thing that happens when you activate these is, of course, you get lots of calcium in the cell. The calcium levels go up. That excessive calcium intracellularly in the cell can produce all of the responses that have been reported over and over and over again in the scientific literature in our bodies that are produced by these by EMF exposures. Okay. Now, let me just say one other thing about this. You know, the EMFs that we're most concerned about are the microwave frequency EMFs that you were just referring to. Cell phones, cordless phones, all kinds of cordless communication devices, cell phone towers, smart meters, etc. All of those, you know, and there are many others, and, you know, radar units and cars and everything, we're being exposed to more and more of these day by day. So, and there's one other thing about this that is, you know, I mean, you say, well, that's, you know, that's really chilling. I can give you probably a dozen reasons why it's even much more chilling than that. But let's just talk about one of those. There's a literature going back all the way to the 1950s that have shown that pulsed fields that you know, EMFs that pulse up and down rapidly, are much more biologically active in most cases than non-pulsed fields. And so every single wireless communication device communicates via pulsations. And the smarter they are, the more pulsations they put out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so it is almost certainly the case that, you know, that these things are becoming more and more dangerous as they become so-called smarter and smarter.
So let me just think about this. So like a smart meter has much more of these rapid pulses going on, pulsations going on, than you say your cell phone, which is why smart meters are causing much more, are having, I wouldn't say much more, but are having severe biological effects on people, because it's like an intensified pulsed field, more so than a cell phone. Are you, is that right?
But you have smartphones too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
They pulse more than the dumb phones that
right.
everybody used to have, right? So,
right.
You know, the things get worse and worse and worse. And and the industry, of course, denies all of this stuff. You know, everything I have to say, they will deny. I guarantee it. So this is the basic situation. And so then the question is, okay, how do you explain how this excessive calcium in the cell, how that produces these various biological effects, okay? And so I've discussed that in several of my papers, and what's going on is that there are a number of things that we know excessive calcium in the cell can produce. And so one of the things that happens, and I have a figure in some of my papers that describes this. It's kind of hard to describe it, you know, on the radio. But basically, what we have is a you get excessive calcium signaling because calcium is a very important signaling molecule. You get, and one of the things that's particularly important about calcium signaling is that you get increases in nitric oxide, and because
which can be a good thing. Nitric oxide can be beneficial.
Exactly. And so then the question is, okay, so what does nitric oxide do then? And the answer is nitric oxide can act along two pathways. In one of the pathways is what's called the nitric oxide signaling pathway, is thought to be the main mechanism for therapeutic effects of these EMFs. So there are genuine therapeutic effects of these EMFs when they are at appropriate levels, when they're focused on a specific part of the body that needs some help. And, you know, so when you have just the right exposures and just the right, focus, you can get therapeutic effects. And those therapeutic effects are thought to occur through this nitric oxide signaling pathway. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that can happen, though, is that nitric oxide can react with another compound called superoxide, and superoxide also goes up when calcium levels go up. And those two react to form a compound called peroxynitrite, which is a potent oxidant and breaks down to form reactive free radicals. And together they produce oxidative stress, which is a imbalance between oxidants and antioxidants in the body. And those things are all very important in producing many of the pathophysiological effects, many of the disease-causing effects. Okay, so you've got excessive calcium signaling can be involved in disease-causing effects, and you've got this peroxynitrite pathway that can be involved in disease-causing
And DNA damage.
And DNA damage is caused by the free radicals that are produced when peroxynitrite breaks down. They attack the DNA. And the kinds of DNA damage that you get following EMF exposure in the cells. So this is not a direct effect of the EMFs on the DNA. It's an indirect effect through this VGCC activation and calcium and peroxynitrite. You get these free radicals, and they attack the DNA, and they produce exactly the kinds of DNA damage that has been shown to be produced following EMF exposures in cells. Okay.
Well, so I would imagine that the pathway that leads to the free radical damage is exacerbated, opening up those channels through all the smart devices we have. Our smart devices are not the therapeutic range that have benefit. These are the devices and the range that is actually going down that very dangerous pathway you just described.
Yeah, exactly. It goes down that pathway. And it's because the excess calcium in the cell produces much higher levels of nitric oxide and much higher levels of superoxide. And those two things, as I said, react with each other to form peroxynitrite. So that's why that pathway can be very active and produce a lot of damage. Now, all the damage, all of the pathophysiology, however, is not produced through that mechanism. A lot of it is, probably a good majority of it is. But there are also other things that involve excessive calcium signaling. So calcium signaling is very important in the body. And like any signaling set of pathways, you can have too much, you can have too little. In this case, we're talking about way too much, and it can cause pathophysiology as well.
So it's an abnormal reaction. This is not an... I mean, it's an aberration in the body to have these voltage-gated calcium channels mm-hmm. that are these pathways going into the cells through the membranes to to be opened up to the extent that they are now doing because of exposure to EMFs and altering the amount of these calcium ions that are signaling, communicating, giving the, you know, messages to the cells of how to act and how to be healthy and how to do what they need to do properly. So this is an aberration directly caused from exposure to EMFs, right?
An aberration, yes. So that's a good question. Is this a direct effect on the VGCCs, or is it an indirect effect? Okay, and I argue it's a direct effect, and that's based on two different kinds of observations. Okay. One is that there was a beautiful study done by Arthur Pilla, who was, and I don't know whether he still is, at Columbia University, where he showed that the a pulsed microwave, or at least radio frequency EMF, can produce almost instantaneous increase in nitric oxide production. So when you see that, you're seeing an effect that is so rapid that there are many indirect mechanisms that are immediately thrown out. Okay, so he found it in less than 5 seconds. You take these cells in culture, you zap them with this pulsed EMF, and you use a nitric oxide electrode in the gas phase above the medium that these cells are growing in, and you detect this in less than 5 seconds. So in less than 5 seconds, you get, according to the mechanism which I've discussed, you get an increase. You activate the VGCCs, you get a big increase in intracellular calcium, you stimulate the nitric oxide synthesis, the enzymes that are calcium dependent that make nitric oxide. And the nitric oxide then diffuses out of the cell and into the medium and then up into the gas phase above it, and all of this occurs in less than 5 seconds. Okay. Yeah. So this is something that is, so it's very difficult to explain that kind of rapidity without arguing that this is a direct effect. But there's another argument which is even more important. And I don't know how much time I should spend on this, but basically, so these VGCCs, they're voltage-gated calcium channels. In the normal physiology, in our normal cells, in our body, under normal circumstances, they are regulated by the electrical charge across the plasma membrane. And so the thing that opens them up is a change in the charge across the membrane. And it turns out that there is a structure in that channel which is called the voltage sensor. This thing detects these electrical changes across the plasma membrane and can open the channel. When you look at the structure, so that we know what the structure is of that voltage sensor. So we know what the structure is. We know pretty much how it works. And you look at that structure, what you find is that structure is, based on basic physics, is stunningly sensitive to the forces produced on it by these very low-intensity EMFs. And so this is the reason why I think the VGCCs are the main target. It's because the voltage sensor is so incredibly sensitive to these EMFs.
So these EMFs, which now are constant, I mean, we're exposed 24/7. There's no escape really anymore.
Yeah, except they're not. They're pulsing all the time. But we're constantly bathed in it. That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard. I mean, you can shut down your router, and you can shut off your phone, put it on airplane mode. You can put protection on your devices. But the fact of the matter is, through the cell phone towers, through all the other antenna routers in your community. I mean, even, cell phones, emit a field 10 to 15 feet out of the non-ionizing radiation. So it's really hard to be totally free of any exposure at this mm-hmm. point in time, mm-hmm. right? You've really done such a great job in explaining this mechanism of harm. So I'd like you to help my listeners understand what, therefore, are the downstream biological effects or the physiological effects or the health issues that are emerging directly mm-hmm. caused by this constant exposure and opening up of these voltage-gated calcium channels and the other voltage-sensitive responses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so let's talk about those. So the first thing is that as I think you already stated, two of them start with the peroxynitrite free radicals oxidative stress response, and those are one of them is simply oxidative stress. You get a big increase in oxidative stress following exposures. Secondly. You get the damage to the DNA, which can cause, in turn, both cancer when you get mutations in the somatic cells of the body, and also you can also get mutations that are passed on to the next generation if there is one, and we know, by the way, that the DNA damage occurs in sperm cells. Sperm are much easier to study. Male fertility in general is much easier to study than female fertility, but we know that there's DNA damage in sperm cells in response to these EMF exposures. And so again, industry will deny everything I have to say, but this is clearly true in the literature. And what you get then is that you're going to get increase in mutations for the next generation. Now, it's been argued that in humans that you only need to increase the mutation frequency by about a factor of 2.5 to 3 before we will become extinct. Because this is an estimate, but basically you start generating so many different damaging mutations that almost nobody's viable, or at least can reproduce in the next generation. So things can go down very quickly. I think this is an extremely serious issue. But only one of the extremely serious issues here. Okay, so we talked about oxidative stress, we talked about DNA damage, we talked about cancer, we talked about mutations, germline mutations. Let's talk about the impact on the nervous system, particularly the brain. The nervous system is, according to some actually quite old studies that were done way back in the 1950s and 1960s, the nervous system is the most sensitive organ in the entire body to these microwave frequency EMFs. And why is that? Well, basically, for two reasons. One is that the VGCCs have very high densities in every single neuron in the entire nervous system. And the reason that there's such high densities of these is because they're involved in the release of every neurotransmitter in the whole nervous system. Hmm. So everything is stimulated in the whole nervous system. Now, these are not just excitatory responses, they're also inhibitory responses, but you get absolutely massive effects on the nervous system. And What I showed in one of the papers I published in 2015 was that one of the things you get is widespread neuropsychiatric effects from these exposures. And these have been shown to occur over and over and over again in the literature. And some of this going back to 1950, some of it going back to, you know, very recent stuff. And specifically, people who use cell phones heavily, people who live near cell phone towers, people who are impacted by smart meters, people who are in Wi-Fi fields. You know, I mean, they all have these increases in these neuropsychiatric effects. When you look at the neuropsychiatric effects, they include essentially everything that people complain about all the time. Now.
So that includes depression, anxiety. It includes hyperactivity. It would include insomnia. Are those some of the things?
Yeah, and fatigue and lack of concentration and anxiety, you already said. And there was one thing that I left out, or you left out, I can't remember. It's memory loss. All those things are, occurring, and people complain about them all the time. And we know for certain that these things are caused by these EMFs. And it's not just one kind of EMFs. I'm not saying they're all identical in terms of what effects they produce, but what I am saying is that they are quite similar in terms of what kind of responses you see and what kind of damage you see. And when these things have been studied in animals, what you see is you see progressive and with time massive changes in the structure of the neurons, in the synapses that connect them up. You see an increase in cell death, what we call apoptosis, in the neurons. A lot of this stuff comes from the literature in the 1950s and 1960s, but then there's also a lot of recent literature on it. And so what you see collectively in these animal studies is just massive effects on the brain. And what you also see both from these animal studies and from the occupational exposure studies that were done back in the 1960s and 70s, basically. So back in the 1960s and 70s, essentially the only people who were being exposed to these were people who were exposed as a consequence of their occupation. So they could be studied much more easily in terms of what's happening with them. And what was shown in studies in both in the animals and the people is that these effects are progressive. They get more and more severe with time. They also start out by being reversible. At least in animals, you can expose them for a while and you get modest effects, and you take away the exposures and those effects reverse themselves. If you keep doing this, they become much more severe and they become irreversible. And it seems to be similar in humans based on the occupational exposure studies. So, again, we know this is going on and we know it's progressive, and we don't, I can't tell you all the ways in which this progressivity works, but it gets more and more severe with time. And so what that means is that when the industry tells you, oh, you don't have to worry about it, there can't possibly be a immune mechanism, don't worry about it, etc., what they're doing is they're causing millions and millions of people to have irreversible damage to their nervous systems, to their brains. And so this is part of the world we live in, and people need to know about it.
So we're being lied to for financial reasons, political reasons, the most obvious things, to keep this industry thriving and to keep us addicted to these devices. and which is only going to grow. As you know, the 5G is coming in, which will let us have billions of devices that are based on connectivity. I want to talk about some of the epidemics going on and ask you if you think there is a connection. And mm-hmm. we can start with cardiovascular disease, which is of epidemic proportion. 1 out of 2 people are being diagnosed, you know, with all sorts of variations of the theme on cardiovascular disease. What's your thought about that as being affected, caused, contributed to by the EMF exposure?
Okay. All right, let me tell you what we know about cardiovascular disease. And I think, this is all based on published studies, or almost all based on published studies, but they're not, this area is not widely known. And part of the reason it's not widely known is that nobody's really reviewed it. And I've thought about doing that, but I've got other things to do right now, so it's not going to get done for a while.
In your retirement years.
Well, yeah, right. So what do we know? We know there are effects. Okay, so first of all, there are effects on blood pressure, and interestingly, that you can get both hypertension and hypotension. You can get both high and low blood pressure. Different conditions, but you can get both. And in fact, some people cycle from one to the other.
Yes.
And so that's one thing. And I don't know, you know, how that would fit into the. It may fit into this, you know, the differences. You know, I've talked about therapeutic effects. I talked about the peroxynitrite pathophysiological effects. Those two, you know, can act on the blood pressure in opposite ways, and so that may be part of the explanation there. But I think the most important things that are going on with the heart have to do with two other things that are different from what we usually think about in the heart. One is that the heart has a biological pacemaker in it. Okay, so we're not talking about electronic pacemaker that people have put in when their biological pacemaker doesn't work right. We're talking about the actual biological pacemaker in the heart. And it occurs in some cells, which are called pacemaker cells, that occur in a part of the heart which is called the sinoatrial node. Those pacemaker cells have very high densities of these VGCCs. And so I think there's a direct impact of these EMFs on the pacemaker cells. And I believe that the consequences of that are basically show up in four different responses. Okay, you can get a direct and immediate tachycardia, rapid heartbeat. This can be shown. This has been shown in people, and it's been shown in animals. You can get a direct and immediate effect on, and so that's almost certainly an effect of the EMFs on the pacemaker cells producing rapid heartbeat. But it's also true that over time, when you're exposed to these things, the heart becomes really quite damaged, and particularly the sinoatrial node becomes damaged. And what you end up is with bradycardia, with slow heartbeat. And you also end up with arrhythmias. Hmm. And arrhythmias, as you may know, are life-threatening. And they are associated with what's called sudden cardiac death. And as you may know, we have an unexplained epidemic of young, apparently healthy athletes dying in the middle of an athletic competition of sudden cardiac death. Hmm. My opinion is that that's probably caused by the EMF exposures. Mm-hmm. Previous EMF exposures, maybe concurrent EMF exposure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, and the response has been, well, okay, what do we need? We need to get electronic devices that we can, you know, we can kind of get at least some of these people to recover and so they don't die. And, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing that. We need to be thinking about the cause.
Right.
And that's what we're not doing. And so I think, okay, so that's another thing that's going on.
Okay, cardiovascular disease. What else?
It turns out, and this is stuff that mostly hasn't been published, there are massive effects actually on the erythrocytes, the red cells in the blood, and to the point where many of them are damaged, so many of them die. They develop what have been called rouleau figures, where the red cells, which are kind of donut shaped, as you may know, they kind of stick to each other. So you end up with long chains of these donuts on one on top of another.
Yeah.
And those things can basically clog up the whole circulatory system. Rather
than being free floating, as red blood cells should be.
Yeah, and red cells are really designed to, in evolution to be things that go through the circulatory system very easily. And now this thing, it just completely destroys all of this stuff, in addition to destroying many of the cells themselves. I was talking to, and apparently there's been a study done, I don't know, I think, I'm not sure whether it's been published or not, where children go to school with a Wi-Fi field on, and in the morning, on Monday morning they look fine. By the end of school on Monday, they've got all these problems, lots of problems with the erythrocytes, just from one day in the school in the Wi-Fi field.
What would that look like?
They vary. Some of them you actually end up with a lot of dead cells that are lysed and broken and stuff. Some of them you end up with these rouleau figures, and you can see them. They're just long strings of erythrocytes that are stuck together.
The question that I'm curious about is, if this happens, and mm-hmm. these children are exposed to these fields because we now have Wi-Fi in schools,
mm-hmm.
and homes are totally wired, what do the symptoms look like in children who have these effects from their red blood cells?
A lot of them get headaches, but I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I know there are symptoms. I know there are, it'll affect the brain, of course, if you don't get good circulation.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when you're looking at these things, I don't know, question is, how do you distinguish between the effects on, for instance, if there's an effect on the brain, how many of those are direct effects on the brain, and how much of this is stuff that's produced through the erythrocytes? It's fairly hard to know.
And it's kind of all going on simultaneously anyway, right? I mean, the brain is being affected, the red blood cells are being affected,
right.
The calcium channels are being affected. So your body is being compromised on so many very fundamental levels.
Yeah.
For optimal functioning.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about the erythrocytes, I think until people started finding these, and I had found the VGCC mechanism, and let me just say again, that's not my experimental studies. These were studies in the literature that other people had done, and they've basically been ignored by other scientists, including each of the people who were doing these, ignoring the other studies that have been done. They probably didn't know about them. So I take no credit, obviously, for the actual studies. The question is, so one question is, well, the erythrocytes, which after all are very, very highly complex, very different from other cells in the body, you might not expect them to have any VGCCs in them, but in fact they do have them in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. In the plasma membrane of the VGCCs, in the plasma membrane of the erythrocytes, you have the VGCCs. And so... the other thing is, why are the erythrocytes so strongly affected? And that, I think, is another interesting part of this story, because, you know, it's not like they have very high densities of the VGCCs like the neurons do, like the heart cells do, and so forth. And by the way, the reproductive cells also have high densities of VGCCs. But they don't. Erythrocytes don't. So why are they so affected? And I think the reason is that, you know, what normally happens in normal cells when you get a lot of calcium going into the cytoplasm of the cell, a lot of that calcium is sequestered in the mitochondria and in what's called the endoplasmic reticulum. So these are parts of things, you know, these are organelles within the cytoplasm that can grab onto the calcium and kind of store it away for a while. Erythrocytes don't have any of those. Erythrocytes don't have a nucleus, they don't have an endoplasmic reticulum, they don't have mitochondria, they don't have any of these things. So they don't have any way of you know, temporarily storing their calcium. And so
which is a protective mechanism.
Well, yeah, and so I think that's probably the reason why they're so affected by this. There may be other reasons as well, because since they don't have a nucleus, they may not be able to have some protective mechanisms that perhaps some other cells do have. So there are quite a number of, you know, the things that are different, but I think that's the main reason why they're so sensitive. So again, let me just say again, the industry will totally deny everything I have to say. So don't be surprised to hear them say, you know, oh, there's no truth to this, etc. And it's simply wrong. Okay. That's where we are.
Okay. So we're kind of coming to the end of the conversation, but there's so much I still want to ask you. So let me go over to the subject of autism, which we talked a little bit about before the show.
Mm-hmm.
In the time we have left, can you talk about the relationship between exposure to these pulsed electromagnetic fields and the increased RINSET incidence of autism and other and learning disabilities and ADHD?
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, we already talked about this, you do have a massive impact on the brain, including on the synapses, and I mentioned that briefly before. The synapses are critical in terms of autism, and I don't really have time to talk about that, but they are. And what's true is that there are four mechanisms that are involved in the development of the synapses in the brain that are all controlled by calcium. So they can be screwed up by excessive calcium in the cell. and so I think, you know, fundamentally that's the fundamental central thing that's going on in autism. There are lots of other things that are going on as well. Now, So what happens then is that you activate the VGCs, you get excessive calcium. When you do this during the development of the brain, it screws up the formation of the synapses, and then you get autism. Now, how do we have any evidence as to whether that's true? And the answer is there is a lot of evidence, actually, but I can't talk about most of it here. Let me just mention a couple of things. One is that we know that there are rare mutations that can cause autism that produce excessive activity of the VGCCs. So we know excessive activity of the VGCCs can cause autism from those rare mutations. Now, that doesn't tell you that this is a common mechanism in the wider autism population. But we also know that there is a polymorphism in the most important VGCC in the brain, where one form of that gene produces higher amounts of the protein and therefore higher activity. And those people who carry that form are at greater risk for autism, to develop autism. And so we know that because you can study the genetics of autism people and you compare them with normals, and there's a big difference there. So Anyway, these are, and there are lots of other things, but I don't think we have time to talk about them.
But the important thing is that people need to be aware that there are these relationships between exposure and increased incidence.
Well, let me just say, autism is an extremely complex disease. Okay, and what I'm saying is that, you know, it's a big mistake to try to oversimplify it, and I don't want to try to do that.
Right.
But what I do want to do is to say, and I will tell you right now, I have not made the broader case here. There is a very substantive broader case that can be made that the EMF exposures are the main driver of the autism epidemic. I don't think it is 100% certain yet, but I think it's quite probable.
Well, so you've touched on so many areas that should really alarm people and make them, you know, aware of the fact that the wireless world that we have entered into, and it's only exponentially increasing, is uncharted territory as far as the long-term consequences. And your work is so seminal to help people understand these mechanisms that have been denied and still are being denied by industry because they're not even measuring it on the levels that we're talking about here. So I just want to ask you, in the time we have, what are your best strategies for being protected from exposure? What do you recommend people do?
Okay. How much time do we have?
Well, I don't know. About 5 minutes.
About 5 minutes. Okay. Okay. As you said, it gets harder and harder every day in every way. And let me just say, what I do, when I do things, that doesn't necessarily mean this is the best thing you can do. I don't claim to be an expert on all these things. I find in my life that the time I have problems with exposure when I'm traveling. I don't have any problems at home because my home is in pretty good shape. And even just my traveling around the city of Portland where I live, I'm in pretty good shape there too. But I do, try to avoid cell phone towers. I don't have a cell phone. If I did, I would take reasonable precautions in terms of how to use it and keep it, if you could, keep it in airplane mode wherever possible and keep it away from your body wherever possible. And use a headset wherever possible. I mean, those are all things that, people can do. The problem is, and Wi-Fi is problematic, and that's a huge problem because Wi-Fi is all over the place, including in our schools, which is an outrage, I think, of Olympic proportions. And I think that, we've got smart meters on our house. I've got one on my house. What have I done about that? No, I put shielding around on the inside of the wall that has the other thing I've done, and this was done actually before it was put in, I got a building biologist to put in a couple of outlets going into the circuit breaker box through short wires in the two different circuits. And mm-hmm. I put some filters in there, something like the Stetzer or mm-hmm. Greenwave filters.
Yeah. There's also the Faraday cages, too, by the way, that are designed to go over the smart meter, which reduces exposure.
Yeah. Yes. And, in fact, I've done some shielding right over the smart meter. I mean, a lot of these smart meters, they're putting out amounts that are 1,000 times more or more than that than they need to. And so we're being exposed to all kinds of things we don't need to be exposed to. and you can put shielding right over it and cut it down. And you know, I've done that, and I wore shielding when I was putting this thing up. I still got my belt just like everybody ever did before. So. But you know, these things are everything takes time. If you're living in, I know people in the city have problems because you're living in big apartment or condominiums, and you're getting Wi-Fi from people next door, not just from your. And so you may want to put shielding on the walls, in the floor, in the ceiling. I mean, all over the place. And it gets more and more difficult. The bigger the city you're in, the more difficult it is. The more sources there are that are attacking you. And and what's true, and we haven't talked about this, is that another kind of regulatory system that's being attacked by the EMFs is your hormone systems, your endocrine systems. So every single important communication thing that makes us a real live animal, let alone human being, is being attacked.
Yeah.
And
I wrote an article about EMFs and how it affects our hormones, and it affects our thyroid, affects our cortisol stress hormones. It, of course, reduces testosterone, affects the sperm, can affect estrogen dominance, exhaust the adrenal glands. I mean, the list goes on and on. Every hormonal pathway and hormonal system is affected by exposure based on the studies that I found, researching the articles.
And there were eight hormonal effects that were reported back in 1971 when the Office of Naval Medical Research in the U.S., wrote this big, long report, eight different ones. No, 1971. And we're still ignoring all this stuff.
Yeah,
again, so industry will deny everything I have to say.
Yes, and, that's a whole other conversation we could have is the fact that industry is ignoring all this and denying there are any possible side effects as the toll keeps mounting and the evidence keeps mounting. So people have to kind of use their common sense to figure out why that may be and learn that, as I like to say, putting your head in the sand isn't going to keep you safe when it comes to this. And your work is so important to help us understand the mechanism, to see all the downstream effects and to make us all aware that we have to get protected. We have to get protection. There's a technology that I use, Dr. Paul, and I'm happy to send you the information on this patented technology that has a protection to the biology, to our cells, based on a technology called molecular resonant effect technology. That's what I use. But we have to find whatever is out there that's proven effective and take the steps, because the health of our health, the health of our children, and as you pointed out, the health of future generations really depends on taking this action.
Yes.
So
we will not have future generations if we don't take action.
Well, it's that just makes it, a huge mission that we have to do here. And I so appreciate the work you've been doing and the research, because I know you've been traveling around the world since 2013 when your paper came out. I see you on YouTube, and in fact, people can find out more about your work and your published studies. You can go to PubMed. It's Dr. Paul, P-A-L-L. So get the right spelling there, Dr. Martin Paul, and learn for yourself the evidence that's out there and the studies and Dr. Paul's work. It's so imperative that we do that. Well, Dr. Paul, once again, it's just such a pleasure having you on the show. I so appreciate the wonderful and important work you are doing in helping all of us stay healthy, survive and thrive in the years ahead, and I just wish you the greatest success as you continue to do your research and share it with the rest of us.
You're entirely welcome.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me again for another opportunity. Really important topic as always. So until next time, I just want to remind you to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know, and my guest today has been Dr. Martin Paul. See you next week. Bye for now.